It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. The 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution outlawed slavery, but some are calling prison labor a modern form of the institution sanctioned by the amendment's exception for prison labor. Prisoners are helping fight California's wildfires for $1 an hour. Elsewhere, prisoners are leased to private companies as cheap labor. Some are calling this system modern-day slavery. A sociologist joins us to talk about the history of prison labor in America, how programs vary across the country, and who they really benefit, states or inmates. We also take a look at Wisconsin's program. Inmates in California getting paid $1 an hour to fight fires in addition to a time off their sentence. Do you think that's enough money for it to matter? Or do you think the state is taking advantage of cheap labor? Should prisons do away with inmate labor altogether? Why or why not? Employers, do you currently employ inmates? When did you start offering them employment and why? And how much do you pay them? Or maybe you're someone who took advantage of a work program while in prison. What was that like? Did the skills you gained in the program translate to a career outside of prison? Tell us about that as well. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. John Eason is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is the author of Big House on the Prairie, Rise of the Rural Ghetto and Prison Proliferation. John Eason, welcome to the morning show.
Thank you, John. It's great to be back again.
Some of the people currently fighting California's wildfires are inmates. The state's Department of Corrections says they're part of a volunteer firefighting program that pays them up to $2 a day and $1 an hour, $2 a day when fighting active fires, $1 an hour elsewhere. Some have called this slave labor, but the state Department of Corrections says it helps inmates build skills in firefighting. Johnny said, how do you look at it?
My colleague Phil Goodman at University of Toronto has published a paper where he's looking at prisoners as either heroes or inmates, and he concludes that they're basically both. This isn't just about exploitation, but given the history of exploitation with prison labor, I could see how everyone wants to call this exploitative and like the convict leasing system or like slavery. There are instances in this country, modern instances, where it harkens back to convict leasing, but it still isn't as prison labor still isn't as bad as it was at that point during slavery or convict leasing.
And these inmates in California who have been fighting the wildfires, can they turn their experience into a job as a firefighter once their sentence is completed?
That's been difficult. That doesn't always translate very well. But people want to look at the end result only, as if when people get out, if they can definitely get a job as a firefighter. But it's also about making meaning and sense of your life while you're doing time. I think firefighting is something people look at it as a heroic job, like you're an individual out there battling flames. But it actually requires a lot of teamwork, coordination, and effort. And I think those skills are transferable in the other jobs as well. You have to realize that many prisoners have been deemed or actually have antisocial behavior. So in prison is not the best environment to socialize people, to operate out in society. So if you can give them a task to do, even if you're paying them a nominal fee for their time, I think the experience, at least the way it's been written about and portrayed, Brett Story she's a filmmaker. She had a film a documentary on PBS that shows firefighters as well, how they make meaning of their lives. Inmates who fight fires, how they make meaning of their life and how it really gives them a sense of purpose.
Who gets the most out of this transaction, the state or the inmate?
It depends on what you're talking about. Monetarily, most definitely the state. Making $1 an hour or $2 an hour is not something that's great for anyone, no matter what condition. Technically, it's not free labor because they're giving them some nominal fee. But I think it's also, this is why I pointed to how the inmates make sense of what they're doing. They're not doing this. There is some agency by the inmates. They could just choose to do other prison labor, or they could choose not to do this type of work at all. Given their options, this is actually a real privilege. So I think in that sense, it's a win-win. It's not like in Angola, which is a prison in Louisiana, which was converted from slavery straight into from a slave plantation straight into a prison, where prisoners do menial labor for pennies on the dollar, and basically work until they die because many of them are on death row. If you contrast what's going on with prison labor in California versus a place like Louisiana, you have to see a real benefit for the inmates, but the state is always winning in these exchanges.
John Eason is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We're talking about the prison labor system in America. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Let's take a call. Anne is with us in Green Bay. Anne, good morning.
Good morning. Well, I'm all for the prisoners being able to do work. I think it gives them something to do, and some of them can gain some skills. But they need to be paid a living wage or a wage that everyone else that would be doing that job, because when you're in prison, you still have to pay for phone calls and items from the canteen and certain amount of clothing and some of your dental and medical care. So they still have to pay for things in prison. So they should be paid a wage in which they can afford to do these things.
And thanks for that call. Let's take a call from Bill in Superior and get another take on this same issue, and then we'll have our guest respond. Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, I completely disagree with that. They are criminals. They broke the law. Why are they getting paid at all is where I'm going with it. It should be like an ongoing restitution for they're getting food for free. They're getting education for free. They're getting health care for free on top of them being incarcerated. Why are they getting paid for doing bad things? I completely disagree with your former caller.
Okay, well, we have two contrasting callers there, Ann and Bill. John Eason, care to respond to those?
I want to thank both callers for their opinions. The issue is very complicated. While Ann, I can see the need for advocating for higher wages given the cost associated with being a prisoner, there are some limits to that. And the other caller, I think that's more of the tough on crime. I don't think people are getting paid for doing bad things if they're already in prison. So we can either decide to put good money into investing in actually rehabilitating people, or we can continue to throw money away. Prisoners typically aren't getting free education. Much of our educational programs throughout the country have been stripped out of prisons. So people can't go into prison and get a GED or other definitely not higher ed degrees. Those have been cut back in many states, especially in the South. So in healthcare in prison, while they have access to health care, it's not the best health care. That's very complicated. And given the fact that prisoners, we also have debtors prisoners today, you have to realize that. There are people who are convicted of not paying a fine who have been put into prison because they couldn't afford to pay a fine they got. So punishing them further by not allowing them to work or not giving them any way to earn their way out of a situation doesn't help. So that's my response to that.
All right. Thanks for those calls. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. John, let's briefly talk a little bit about the history of prison labor in America. The 13th Amendment ended slavery but left open a loophole. How does that work?
So 1865 were the final slaves were set free in Texas. They were 2.5 years late with that. But in 1867, convict leasing started picking up across the South. And convict leasing is where people who were incarcerated were forced into work camps. So there were white people in these work camps as well, but it was disproportionately young black men, as young as 14. So thousands of young black men across the South were forced into these labor camps, doing mining, forestry, and the like, and states leased them out to private companies and took all of the money. They didn't even reinvest into the camps. So they basically worked these young men to death. And since the late 1800s, the disproportionate rate of incarceration for African American men that still exists today was established, and it was built around, it was established around prison labor. So the worry about prison labor hearkening back to slavery is real, but we don't have that, we don't have those same conditions where people are being worked to death in camps today.
We'll continue our conversation with John Eason, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, in a moment. We're talking about the prison labor system. You can join us at 800-642-1234. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Prison labor in America, that's what's on our mind this hour. Some are calling it modern-day slavery. Others are saying it's a great way to rehabilitate people who are in prison and give them some skills that they can use when they get out. John Eason is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the author of Big House on the Prairie, Rise of the Rural Ghetto, and Prison Proliferation. John Eason, let's fast forward to the modern day. Prisons in all states, do they put their inmates to work in some capacity?
Many states do. There's a historic prison industries that's it's national, but it's run by individual states. So many of them do. It's a way to keep them active. Prison industries, when we were going through the tough on crime era, actually suffered a lot. Very conservative. Fiscally conservative politicians cut funding for it, saying that prisoners didn't even deserve to work, really. So this was the tough on crime move against prison work, where education was cut in prisons. It's gone through some different phases, and we actually have it here in Wisconsin. The Badger State Industries is a big part of building furniture and doing other things, for state entities. So professors, for example, I just moved here a few months ago. One of the places I could get furniture from for my office was from Badger State Industries. So, yeah, states have this. It's been around for, I think, since 1915.
How does prison labor vary from state to state? Is it used for punitive purposes in some states or rehabilitative reasons in others?
I don't think it's used for punitive. It's not used for punishment as much, even in Angola, which is one of the worst examples. But there are rather mundane jobs. where you're just like pressing license plates, you're not going to have many skills, transferable skills from that. There are call centers in prisons now. There used to be call centers overseas. We've moved some of those into prisons. So there are different types of jobs that you can get in prison, in prisons, but it varies from state to state. But I'd have to say the South, if a place is going to be more punitive, it's going to be in the South.
Let's take a call from Lucy in Madison next. Lucy, good morning.
Good morning. I originally called in because I wanted to tell you that I know a young man in prison who's working for the state at a very low wage, and he should be getting out soon, and so he's really hoping he can get a better job in order to have enough money not to be destitute when he gets out. And that's a problem. A lot of prisoners get out with nothing, and that really makes it hard for them not to reoffend because of the draconian nature of the parole rules. But the other thing that I heard as you're talking is about the Jim Crow system of imprisoning black people so that they could work. And I think there's a lot more to it than what you've said. There's a great documentary that you can stream for free from PBS called Slavery by Another Name. And one thing that it points out was that the laws were specifically made to be able to imprison black people, like vagrancy laws that said if you don't have a job, you're violating the law, so we can imprison you. And I think even today we see some repetition of that, or some remainder of that, in some of the things that are going on, like in the area of Ferguson, Missouri, that in that whole area there are a lot of municipalities that have a rule that you can't have a guest in your home unless you register them with the police department. And
okay, Lucy, a lot to chew on there in a limited amount of time. John Eason, care to comment on what Lucy had to say?
I think Slavery by Another Name is a great documentary, and I was remiss in mentioning it. But yes, it is a great documentary, and it can give a lot more detail. I didn't think we had time to give the whole history of prison industries, prison labor, justice, but I would definitely check that out. As far as the remnants of Jim Crow laws, yes, there are remnants of these laws. You can see pants sagging laws pop up all across the country. There are a number of these, you couldn't spit on the street during Jim Crow. African Americans couldn't spit on the street, and other minor laws, but it's also the enforcement of these laws. It's not just the existence, it's the enforcement of these laws. So that goes into policing, which is, if we're talking about prison labor, that's several steps removed. And I'm not trying to minimize racism today. Racism has been prevalent in this country since the founding, so it's just taken another form. And you can't talk about slavery and Jim Crow and mass incarceration all as sort of one thing. They're very mm-hmm. different systems. So,
Lucy, thanks for sharing your story with us. Let's go to Jake in Milwaukee next. Jake, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Professor. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead.
So I wanted to hear Professor Eastman's comments on the potential complications of private prison systems who have contracts with the state and can actually draw a penalty fine from the state if their numbers get too low, and how that may play into the labor system, as well as how the invisible penalty in many states where if you go to prison, especially for a felony, even when you get out, there are many jobs you are not able to have because you cannot get the licenses for it.
Mm-hmm. Jake, we need to give Johnny some time to respond to your questions here. Go ahead.
Jake, those were two great questions. First, the private prison industry, if you want to look at the exploitation of that industry as it relates to the criminal justice system, you really need to look at the immigrant detention system, where 55% of the immigrant detention centers are owned or operated by private industries. Only 10% of prisons are operated by private industries. So that's not as big a problem as people make it seem. There are some examples of exploitation, but they're kind of overblown. The worst stuff being done in prison labor is through states, not so much through private industries. And secondly, if we're talking about prisoners when they get out and their job opportunities, we actually we probably do need to invest more in prison industries within the prison, but there needs to be more money put on the outside of prisons. And when people are reentering society, there's two million people incarcerated, 2.2 million people incarcerated annually. There's over there's normally 8 to 10 million who are on probation and parole who need help getting a job. So that's where we need to put more money.
Briefly, when we think about prison reform, does prison labor fit into the picture, and if so, how?
It does fit into the picture, and I think it needs to be linked where there's continuity between potential positions, not a one-to-one match, a perfect match. So if you're a firefighter in prison, you get out and you're being trained to be a firefighter on the other side. But if you're a firefighter or had any other one of the more regular jobs, like building furniture, which they do in Wisconsin, that you can be matched up with a series of other employment programs upon your release. So there needs to be more and better connections to industries established outside of prisons, and there needs to be ways for people to leave prison and go into those jobs.
John Eason is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and author of Big House on the Prairie, Rise of the Rural Ghetto, and Prison Proliferation. John, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, John.
I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.